Reactor online. Sensors online. Weapons online. All systems nominal.
Hello, everyone. This is Carrie with the Unicorn Company podcast. So this is, I don't know if I want to call it a full episode. I am recovering from COVID, which, if you have ever dealt with it, I totally feel for you. And if you have not dealt with it, make sure that you are keeping up on boosters and everything else, because it is a bear. I have essentially been down for over a week, and I am just now able to talk enough to get a, I don't want to say a review, but an update with the PAX news as far as the mech PAX. Now, this episode will run a lot further than I had originally planned. It does have a mech tech in it. So we'll be talking about the Force packs, and then we'll be talking about some stuff that sort of came from the reaction to the Force packs. And, you know, I just kind of want to give you all a heads up there, let you know that this will be going a little bit further than I had originally planned. Okay, so before we even get into that, I do want to thank all of my patrons who have made this possible. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/unicorncompany. And also, I want to thank my sponsor, Fortress Miniatures and Games. They are awesome, and I really love them. If you need anything for Battletech, anything at all, I highly recommend checking out Fortress Miniatures and Games. They are a wonderful, wonderful online store, and they're also the sponsors and the runners, the hosts, I guess, of Southern Assault. So, of course, next year, I'm already looking forward to Southern Assault 4, which I'm guessing is going to have about 100 people. So, anyway, let's get into PAX news and stop thinking about stuff that, you know, I'd already talked about. So, PAX news, as far as what they have, as far as product that's coming out, I'm not really going to go into the fiction stuff. I know Big Red covers that a little bit, but it's not something that I'm really too going to go into, really. But the products. So first of all, they have Force manuals planned, which, if anybody remembers the books for Alpha Strike, for Karita and Mercenaries, this is essentially that same type of product, but pretty much redone in a way that will, I don't know how to put it, done in a way that kind of jives and works with the current iteration of Alpha Strike. And I'm sure that it probably also works with Classic, but it, from my understanding of it, it's more geared towards Alpha Strike. So your Force manuals that you'll have coming out in the coming year, first of all, is going to be Davian. And if you are part of the Kickstarter, you may have this as part of what you could have gotten before, or gotten as part of your Kickstarter. The next one after that, which should be released the quarter after, would be Karita. And then the last one is going to be Mercenaries. So pretty much covering the, using the old Comstar clock, the 12 to almost like 5:30 of the Inner Sphere map. So covering Karita, Davian, and Mercs. And of course, I'm assuming that after that, they're either going to go counterclockwise and do Steiner, then Merrick, and then some, they'll have to do the Capella Confederation, and probably incorporate the clans somehow at some point if these products sell well. And I really hope they do because I like the idea of having house or faction specific types of things to give them a certain flair and a certain bit of flavor in the game, which you don't really get. Next up, we have a Hotspots book. Now, this is something that has, I think they released one for the Blakist era. Before that, there was like a Hotspots 3050 something. And this is pretty much to give you like hooks for like mercenary units and stuff like that. Basically gives you like where all the stuff's going on. So you have an idea of like, all right, we're going to do something in the Hinterlands, which this one is going to be called Hinterlands. Kind of gives you like force abilities, force strengths, and shoot, still have a little bit of brain fog going on. Force strengths and all the the type of diplomatic situations in that area. Then you'll have something called the Mech Commander's Handbook, which is a campaign system. I assume this is a replacement system for the Chaos campaign system. We'll have to see how that sort of works. And then as far as source books and stuff like that, you'll have another recognition guide coming out. And finally, a book called Ilkhan's Eyes Only. That's scheduled for third quarter of 2024. And it sort of wraps up everything about what's going on in the Inner Sphere after Clan Wolf took Terra. So, the new force packs. The first one is going to be a first Starlink Defense Force Command Lance. It will have an Atlas II, a Phoenix Hawk Special, a Thunderhawk, and an Orion. And the Orion is going to be pre-painted as Kerensky's Orion. It is not the right model for it. I'm just going to say that right now. Other people have mentioned it as well. If there's any nitpicks I have, that's pretty much it on this. It's not going to be the correct Orion variant for Kerensky, but it is an Orion. It's going to be painted up as Kerensky's Orion. Then you will have the next one after that is the second Starlink Defense Force Assault Lance. It has a Deshi Prometheus, pre-painted up as Victor Steiner Davian, an Emperor, an Argus, a Helios, and a coolant truck. So I think they're trying to include vehicles in these lances. And to me, this feels more like a FedCom Civil War Lance pack than it does a second Star League. Because if I recall correctly, all of these are available to the Federated Suns forces during the FedCom Civil War. So, it's sort of, it feels like they wanted to do one, but they really needed it to be a Star League thing, which feels kind of weird. And yes, my script is written on paper today. Next, we have a third Star League Striker Star. It has a Lament, a Jackalope, a Kintaro, a Hammerhead 2, and a Havoc. It also has a J-27 Ordnance Transport. Now, it's not clear if it's just the tractor or if it's a tractor and like one or two trailers. Because the J-27 did have the tractor itself, and then it had ammunition trailers. No clue which one of these is going to be the pre-paint. And I'm feeling kind of, I feel kind of weird about the choices. The Jackalope is a really, really odd little mech. I feel like that could have been the opportunity to put the champion into plastic, which needs it, but nope, we have a Jackalope, which, like I said, it's an odd, tiny little mech. If you wanted something small and fast, I think if you really wanted a small, fast mech to be that, even though the sculpt is it's not a bad sculpt. Go for like the Roadrunner. It's just way more interesting. Then we have the third Star League Battle Star. That one will have a Savage Wolf Prime or Madcap Mark IV, pre-painted as Alric, a Wendigo, Excalibur, Peacekeeper, and Malice with a Savior repair vehicle. And what this does tell me is that Clan Wolf, I think, is in a position where they are incorporating more Inner Sphere designs simply out of necessity. So that's interesting to see. A few notes I have here. The second Star League Lance really does feel like a FedCom Civil War Lance. Like I said, it's not a complaint. And I think the FedCom Civil War does need some love in plastic. And I'm hoping this force pack leads to more FedCom Civil War plastic minis. A Rakshasa would be wonderful to have. Third Star League Defense Force Striker Star is a very interesting mix of units. I feel like, if anything, like the Kentaro should have been a first Star League Defense Force mech. And the third Star League Defense Force Battle Star, the Wolf and Wendigo are both, to be honest, are both my most anticipated models in this whole announcement. As the models are either too fragile in case of the Savage Wolf, or in the case of the Wendigo, it just doesn't hold enough detail or it has muddy details, which I think I talk about a little bit more in here. So on the subject of pre-painted minis, I have mixed feelings on the idea, the concept, and execution. First of all, the idea. The idea of pre-painted minis isn't a bad one, as it has been seen to be wildly successful in games like HeroClix and Star Wars X-Wing. These games both came pre-painted, although there was a wild difference in the quality of these pre-paints. Excuse me. The quality of the pre-paints, as the HeroClix models were painted in such a poor manner that many of the admittedly sparse details were completely washed out with very heavy and sloppy paint. In stark contrast, the models for the X-Wing miniatures game were painted to a rather high standard, and with such thin coats that the models could be repainted easily with no loss of detail. And so, both as an idea and a concept, pre-painted minis are a good thing in the gaming space, as long as they're executed properly. Which sort of brings me to exactly that. How is this being executed? So, quality is one of the most obvious ways to look at the execution. And to be fair, does raise valid concerns. In this case, though, we'll assume that the miniatures will be painted to a similar quality as the models from the X-Wing miniatures game. Given this, the part of execution I want to focus on is the approach of how the pre-painted minis are being introduced. In my previously cited cases, the games that used or still use pre-painted miniatures do this in an all-or-nothing approach, and in doing so, increase the availability of games to people who may not have the time to paint miniatures, or who may have a physical ailment that prevents them from painting miniatures. I hope this may lead to even more pre-painted minis, possibly with fully painted Lance packs. I do think that the single mini in the boxes may lead to some confusion concerning Catalyst's intentions. These pre-painted minis might have a different effect, though, as it might encourage some people to paint the minis included with them in a way they wouldn't have without those pre-painted models. Personally, if I get these, and I plan to, I will likely leave at least the Orion and Victor's mech as they are. At least keeping one of them, well, each of them, because I'm probably going to buy multiples, in their original form. I know that there have been some people who've come out in opposition to the pre-painted minis. I think a lot of it is a knee-jerk reaction to something new, which is something that can happen in the gaming communities. I think most of these most of the opinions of the about this come from something that I haven't really seen in the Battletech community too much before. And that's a certain level of condescension. I can't pronounce it. Certain level of people snubbing their nose at others who may not, who may be in favor of pre-paints. Now, before I crafted my reaction to the announcement of the new Force Packs, I watched a response to them that essentially had these views and who said that pre-painted minis encourage quote-unquote normies to play the game and it should only be for, once again, quoting here, war gamers. The video also talked about how having pre-paints only serves to encourage people who are, as they said, quoting them once again, lazy in the hobby. And that people in the hobby space should be more like Games Workshop in how the Battletech hobby community looks at painting minis. Even talking about how people in the hobby part of the Battletech community aren't as critical of how minis are painted. It should be more like the GW hobby community with higher standards over miniature painting. Now, to me, this is just another form of gatekeeping. And I firmly stand against gatekeeping. It doesn't matter if it's because of painting minis or any other reason, gatekeeping is wrong. I know that was a long bit about pre-painted minis, and I kind of went off a little tiny bit into gatekeeping there, but I have strong feelings about people who push against new players and fans of the hobby. It comes from a place of experience and a place of having seen new players pushed out of the gaming community because of gatekeeping. I didn't intend for this to become a full-on episode, but we are bordering on it, so I guess it is. Because of this, I do want to take a look at one of the mechs in the third Star League Battlestar. And because I'm very excited to see it in plastic. And that would be the Wendigo. So let's look at it. The Wendigo is an interesting design with peculiar origins. The mech which would become the Wendigo, or at least the impetus for it, was a joint design that the Nova Cats and Draconis Combine were engineering. This was called the Avalanche. Because the Avalanche was limited by the use of Inner Sphere technologies, as well as the demands of the Kurita engineers, the warriors of Clan Nova Cat found the machine to be lacking in comparison to other mechs which were still available to them in the medium weight range. Another thing which rubbed Nova Cat warriors and leadership the wrong way was the fact that the Avalanche was being produced by Luthien Armor Works, and Clan Nova Cat would be given an allotment of the Avalanche, making the Nova Cats dependent on the Combine for the mech. The Wendigo would begin to see production 2 years after the Avalanche in 3135, and it had a very short research and development period as the Nova Cats were able to build off of the developments made during the Avalanche project. With the R&D period pushed forward so quickly that the Wendigo had several prototypes in the field when the Draconis Combine began their invasion of the Republic of the Sphere. The production model of the Wendigo that eventually reached full production and entered service with Clan Nova Cat is a 50-ton machine that is powered by a pretty powerful 300 rated extra light engine that gives it a top speed of 97 kilometers an hour. Oh, excuse me. Just in case y'all missed it in the beginning, if you're just hopping in here for some reason, COVID sucks. So, the Wendigo uses advanced technology in its design through the use of reflective armor. The Wendigo's base chassis is covered in 9.5 tons of reflective armor, in fact, making it more resistant to directed energy weapons such as lasers and particle projection cannons. The Wendigo also incorporates a torso-mounted cockpit, which not only increases the flexibility of the weapons and equipment placement, but also, with the limited personnel in Clan Novacat from years of attrition from living within the Combine, gives greater odds of pilot survivability. For cooling, the Wendigo has 12 engine-mounted double heat sinks, giving it relatively reasonable cooling in its base chassis. The Wendigo also saves space by using an endosteel chassis, which all comes together to give it 19.5 tons of pod space, which is almost 40% of the mech's weight for weapons and equipment payload. In its primary configuration, the Wendigo carries a mixed payload, making it effective at all ranges. In its right arm, it carries a pair of extended-range medium lasers and a single ultra-autocannon too, with a ton of ammunition in the right torso. In the left arm, the prime configuration carries an additional 2 ER medium lasers with a Streak SRM-6 launcher, fed by a ton of ammunition in the left torso. Finally, rounding out the prime's long-range firepower, the Wendigo carries a long-range missile 10-pack with a ton of ammunition in the mech's head. All of the Wendigo Prime's ammunition is protected by case, and the Prime is a good all-around workhorse or trooper design in the 50-ton range. Sorry. The Alpha configuration of the Wendigo is a very straightforward long-range sniper. In each of the arms, the Alpha configuration has a single and highly accurate large pulse laser. And in its head, the Wendigo Alpha carries a single LRM-15 launcher with a ton of case-protected ammunition. The Alpha configuration excels at long-range direct fire support and is decently equipped for indirect fire support with the LRM launcher if it is forced into that role. In the Bravo configuration, the Wendigo is a highly mobile close-range knife fighter. This mobility is provided by its 8 improved jump jets that allow it to jump up to 240 meters in a single bound, which is quite an impressive distance for a 50-ton machine. Each arm on the Bravo configuration carries a pair of ER medium lasers and an ER small laser. In its head, the Bravo configuration has a brace of 3 ER medium lasers. The Bravo is an extremely mobile mech that excels at hit-and-run tactics in a similar manner to mechs like the Pariah B or later Dark Age and Ilklan era medium mechs in use by factions like the Jade Falcons. Charlie configuration of the Wendigo is another highly maneuverable and hard-hitting variant of the mech. The primary long-range firepower is an advanced Streak LRM-15 mounted in the mech's left arm with 2 tons of case-protected ammunition in the left torso. This is backed up by a powerful improved heavy large laser in the right arm. And finally, for close-range engagements, the Charlie configuration mounts a pair of improved heavy medium lasers in the head, as well as an ER small laser in the left torso. This configuration's mobility is enhanced through the use of a right torso-mounted engine supercharger. This enhancement allows the Charlie configuration of the mech to achieve short bursts of speed of up to 120 kilometers an hour. While the supercharger does provide additional mobility, the use of it has to be measured, as extended use can cause damage to the motive system of the mech. So that's looking at the mech in Classic, and it's a variable. It's capable of handling various roles. Now, in Alpha Strike, the Wendigo is an interesting machine. Now, as this is an Omni-mech, it does have the baseline profile stuff, and normally I would present that, but the Wendigo changes so much between its configurations. We'll go over everything in each of the configurations. Starting with the Wendigo Prime, it is a battle mech, size 2, TMM2, 12 move, and is a skirmisher. The Wendigo Prime has short and medium range values of 5 with 1 damage at long. It has no overheat value with armor of 5 and structure of 3. Specials on the Prime are Case, Indirect Fire 1, Omni, and Reflective Armor. The Prime configuration is 40 points. Alpha configuration is a sniper, and in this case has the same baseline stats as the Alpha, as far as type, TMM, size, movement, all that stuff, armor and structure. The Alpha configuration does an impressive 4 damage in all 3 range brackets with no overheat value. For a 50 tonner, that's pretty good. The Alpha configuration has specials of Case, Indirect Fire 1, Omni, and Reflective Armor. And with the values of 4 every range and an IF value of 1, the Wendigo Alpha is a very effective sniper, coming in at 39 points. And, oh, yeah, I covered it. I was 40. So the Bravo configuration of the Wendigo is Type Battle Mech, Size 2, TMM 2. So pretty correct, pretty normal so far for all the configurations. Movement of 12 with 16 jump. This configuration, once again, has armor of 5 and structure of 3. It hits very hard at short and medium with damage values of 6 and long and overheat of 0, making it a short to medium range skirmisher. The Bravo configuration has specials of, flip a page, ECM, ENE, Jump Strong 1, Omni, and Reflective Armor. So with the Jump Strong 1 ability, when the Alpha configuration jumps, it gets the plus 1 for the mech jumping, as well as plus 1 for the ability, giving it the same movement modifier as a much lighter machine, and it comes in at 54 points. So it's expensive, but you can move this thing around the battlefield pretty quickly and pretty effectively. And then on top of that, you have decent armor for, armor structure for a 50 tonner, but you move like a dasher as far as your TMM's concerned. So, yeah, it is kind of terrifying when you think about it. So, finally, we have the Charlie configuration, and this model is Battle Mech, Size 2, TMM of 3, and movement of 16 with the role of Skirmisher. It has a short and medium of 5 with a long of 2 and an overheat of 1. It has armor of 5 and structure of 3, and the mech gains a basic bump in speed, as a supercharger has a sustained bump in speed instead of short bursts of speed, which makes the equipment, such as mask or superchargers, far more efficient in Alpha Strike and eliminates the risk of motive damage that can be found in classic Battletech. Now, one of the interesting things, because it has reflective armor in Alpha Strike, it does mitigate damage. If you're shot at by someone who does ENE, you take half damage, and other attacks take minus 1. And I don't remember if there's other effects to that, but it does make the mech even harder to kill than what you would normally have to deal with. So, like, even if one of the quicker variants is tagged by arrow 4, instead of taking 2 damage, you just take 1. It's an awesome ability, and if this thing actually mounted anti-missile system as well, I could see this being a really big pain in the butt. I think, I don't remember in the Penetrator, when I talked about the Penetrator, the newest one I think has reflective armor, but it definitely has a laser anti-missile system, which is like a minus 2 in Alpha Strike, which is really awesome. So anyway, overall, the Wendigo is an excellent machine. It shows the level of ingenuity and technology that the Novacats were putting into their mechs in the twilight of their existence as a single cohesive clan. Even with the deployment of both prototypes and full production models, the Novacats would still end up being disbanded at the end of the Draconis Combine Civil War. The Wendigo, however, would live on, first with Kiso Novacat, as he led a remnant of the ill-fated clan away from the Inner Sphere into the periphery. The mech would obviously make its way into Combine forces, as well as into the Sea Foxes and Rosslug Dominion, who found it to be an able machine. The Wendigo would also make its way to the Clan Protectorate, as well as the Free Worlds League, by way of Novacat survivors that were able to make it out of the Combine and to the Protectorate and the Free Worlds League. So I guess that covers everything about the minis and the force packs and new product for 2024 that was revealed at PAX Unplugged. I do want to thank once again all of my patrons. If you want to support the podcast, like I said, patreon.com/unicorncompany. And also really want to thank Fortress Miniatures and Games again. Awesome company, awesome store, and they have literally just about everything you could want. They have force packs, they have rule books, they have maps, they have terrain. It's like a one-stop shop for battle tech. So I highly recommend checking them out. Until next time, this is Carrie saying don't get COVID and signing off.
I'm gonna find my meaning, I can make a change, I wanna play the game.